chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees. Chicken in the pots, the motto of the Petaloomies. Out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, Smart Talk about Food, Wine, and Farming here on KRCB. Hope you've had a nice weekend. Sure glad that the heat didn't pan out exactly as it was predicted. I hear we may get there tomorrow or Tuesday, but it's been pretty mellow in Sebastopol. Hope it's been pretty mellow wherever you are. Happy Father's Day to all who celebrate that. And I have a guest this evening that I've wanted to have on for quite some time. Before I introduce him, though, I'm going to give you a little assignment to conduct, if you can, while you listen to the show. There's an event coming up next Friday night. Lucky Rice. It is the Lucky Rice Feast in San Francisco. It's being presented by Bombay Sapphire East. And a number of Asian restaurants are participating. I will tell you more about the menu, we'll call it, and some of the other events. But if you would like to go, and that's your assignment, to find out if next Friday you're free to go to San Francisco, I have 2 VIP tickets to give away at the end of the show. Sometimes people get so excited about giveaways that they're the third caller or whatever, and they get the tickets, and then they realize, oh, I'm not in town that day, or I'm busy. So check. I'm not going to give them away. It'll be the last thing we do on the show before we go to our outro music. So check and see. And you can also just Google Lucky Rice as one word plus San Francisco and read about the event. It takes place on Battery Street. So anyway, do that. If you're listening by computer, you know, you can multitask. I do it all the time. And now, Christopher Sawyer, I invited you here on Father's Day, and you came, and that's so nice of you.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. It's a fun thing. I love talking about wine and food, and actually we went to Tony's of North Beach just because it's kind of in this area, and I haven't been there to have pizza before, kind of in the casino, and I know Tony Geminini very well. He's an amazing pizza maker. He's the best in the United States, and you know what it tasted like in having my son there with me enjoying the pizza for the first time. Tony's of North Beach Pizza was a kind of a fun thing. Watching it, just a teeny bit of the Warriors game, but not much. I'm recording it. I'm not going to listen to anything about it until I get home.
How old's your son?
he's going to be 7 tomorrow. Tomorrow is actually, you know, it's summer solstice, and
right.
Usually he is the second longest day of the year, but he is actually the longest day of the year
this year. And what's his name?
Rupert.
Rupert.
Yes.
And tell me about the pizza you had.
Well, it was one that Tony had just won the world championship in Las Vegas for the best traditional style pizza. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a pepperoni, house-made sausage, and just kind of traditional, mm-hmm. Just kind of a thicker kind of sauce.
Thicker sauce. Okay.
Yeah, and it was fantastic. Uh-huh. It was really good. I've got a little bit to take home for a little snack in the morning for
nice.
Sure.
I have to say, I've not been there.
It's really good.
I've not been to the casino.
It's an interesting, it's different, you know? That's all I can say. I'll just leave it there.
I think it's different, but I think casinos all over the world have certain things in common.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had to go to a couple of casinos because I went on a press trip in France. Mm. Our hotel was in a casino.
Yeah.
And same somewhere in South America.
Yeah.
I forget. Well, I think it was in Mendoza. Our hotel was connected, and the only way you could get to an ATM machine was to go into the casino.
You go to Vegas, the chances are you're going to step in one at some point.
Yeah, I was in Vegas, but I was 3, and that was the last time I was there. Yeah. Anyway, welcome.
Thank you.
And I know you through a bunch of tastings we've done lately and through that event up on the coast.
Yeah.
Last October.
Yeah, the Fort Ross Sea View. And I thought your food was amazing. I thought everyone's food was amazing. Every time I think about Fort Ross Sea View, I think about great Pinot Noir, great Chardonnay, and great food that goes with it.
That was a fun event.
Absolutely.
You know, and it didn't bother me that it rained. I actually enjoyed that.
Yeah, you know, Aaron Jordan, who has a great estate vineyard for his Fela brand up there, is going to be with me in Telluride this coming week. So mm-hmm. He's going to be bringing that wine from the Fort Ross Sea View Appellation.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to be talking about that in front of people in, you know, 5,000 feet in the air up in Telluride.
Yeah, what's going on in Telluride?
It's the wine festival, the Telluride Wine Festival.
Uh-huh.
So they asked me to come in as the special wine director for that this year. Mm-hmm. It's the 35th year anniversary, and so like the first wine that I brought for us today to taste is one that's going to be featured in a very special one that's called On the Edge of Reality. It's a Pinot Noir seminar that I'm doing there, so I brought a little special for you to
okay
taste.
Well, let's get started.
Okay.
Tell me about I can't quite see the label. It's okay.
It's from Garnet. Uh-huh. It's a great vineyard that they own that's right there. Hold on, let me pop this open because this so is the good sound effect.
There we go. Ooh. Our favorite sound here on Mouthful.
Hello. What's this all about?
Sounds good.
Oh, it smells good too. So this is a great vineyard that they own. And you can see right here on the label, Rogers Creek Vineyard.
Uh-huh.
Rogers Creek Vineyard is located, if you're going along Highway 101 and you take a left, going south on 101 and you hit Petaluma and you take a left to go that way towards Sonoma.
Lakeville.
Lakeville.
Yeah.
But you're kind of going to cut over and go 116.
Stagecoach.
And that's really where it's at. It's mm-hmm. just before you, I hate to say this, but before you get to the dumps. Mm-hmm. It is up on the hill above the dumps, and it's actually an amazing vineyard. It's very influenced by the cool air that comes mm-hmm. in every day through the Petaluma Gap, and the Garnet, the owners of the Garnet brand own that vineyard, and they sell to a lot of great producers. So David Ramey, I'm going to be doing a great seminar with that's very focused on his stuff too,
mm-hmm.
and he gets a lot of Syrah from this vineyard. So
uh-huh.
this is just a beautiful, cool climate style of Pinot Noir, and it's the ideal place to be growing. I posted something on my SawyerSom.com just recently on this, and people said, "Oh my God, I love that vineyard! I got a little bit of fruit from there. I made a Pinot with it. I did this. I did that." And it's got a little recognition going right now.
Now, is it part of Petaluma Gap?
It is. It is.
It's been, you know, I used to live out. I lived out there for almost a decade. There was not one grapevine anywhere. It was long ago enough. But now the people that I lived across the street from on Old Lakeville Road number 3, the Flucchinis.
Oh, yeah, the Flucchinis.
Yeah, they have their own label now. They're doing Syrah. They're doing Pinot Noir. Mm-hmm. Their Pinot Noirs are lovely. And then down the road, it would be east from the Flukinis, mm-hmm. not very far, yeah. there is a house where Maria Beatty lived. When I lived there, Maria Beatty was Warren Beatty's cousin.
Oh, my.
And she got married and moved away. Yeah. And the people who are living there now, and I apologize, I didn't prepare. I'm not thinking of their names. But they're growing Pinot Noir as well.
Yeah, there's some Griffin's Lair Vineyard.
It's Griffin's Lair. That's
okay,
it. Thank
Joan
you.
Joan Griffin.
Joan Griffin, yes.
And her husband, Jim. They're great people. Uh-huh. And you know, the San Giacomo Vineyards that we know so well over in the Sonoma County or the Sonoma area, they own, overall, they own 1,600 acres of vineyards. Really, a good chunk of those are actually right there near Sonoma State and that little part down off Lakeville. Mm-hmm. And that's they are in the Petaluma Gap, too. Mm-hmm. So there's probably at least 500 acres that they own mm-hmm. on that old Petaluma Road and the old Lakeville Road. They do a great job with that. And it's really become a special thing. And I came up with a name for the appellation.
Up with Petaluma Gap?
I did. And where I got that name from was because I had so much experience over in Sonoma, and they always called it, you see that V shape right there? That's called the Petaluma Gap. Mm-hmm. That's where the wind comes through. And I know, because I grew up in Petaluma, and I went to Petaluma High, that, I know that wind very mm-hmm. well.
Oh, yeah.
And it comes through there first before it even gets mm-hmm. to Sonoma. And so,
what they call it, Walter Shug, I think, used to call it the Petaluma Express.
Yeah, the Petaluma Express.
The fog that came
in every afternoon. And you can't stop it. You know, you can be sitting up in Santa Rosa, like Paradise Ridge, or one of those great wineries that's up on the mm-hmm. hill, and you can see like where it's coming in very slowly into mm-hmm. Russian River, but you look down south and it's completely fogged in already. And it's a huge thing, and a lot of people have been doing great wines that are made with these kinds of different fruits from there, like Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Syrah, even a little bit of Merlot in there that the Sejas mm-hmm. do. You know, it's fantastic fruit, mm-hmm. and it's
what
really
about
good.
Keller Estates?
Well, Keller Estates, I was just going to get there. So
okay.
Keller Estates is one of my favorites, and Anna Keller is going to be with me for the seminar in Telluride next Saturday, uh-huh. so less than a week from now. And what's great about that, too, is Anna is actually a member. She's part of the Board of Trustees right now. She's on the board of the Sonoma County Vintners. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. she's going to be really giving us some insight, about the, how it differentiates, itself here. What's so great about Sonoma County for wine and for me growing up here and following this since the very beginning, since I was born in 1969, is that these little sub-appellations have really separated themselves from one mm-hmm. another. It's not like driving down Highway 29 or Silverado Trail in Napa Valley. You really have to drive to some of these places, and it's not an easy drive sometimes, but when you get there, you see why people grow fruit there, and it's a fantastic experience overall.
Yeah, I was at Coombsville on Tuesday. Now, that's interesting. I grew up not far from there, Coombsville, southeast of Napa. It's sort of directly east of the, Tukulay Cemetery, which is on the eastern edge of Napa. And it's interesting geographically because it's a collapsed caldera.
Yeah.
And we can so easily forget that this, too, is volcano country. And some of the chunks of hardened ash were just amazing. But it's a schlep to get there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And you get there, and it's very interesting.
Yeah, I was supposed to be at that event, too.
We missed you.
Yeah, Tom Wark invited me, and he's a great guy, and he understood why I couldn't be there. The problem was that Robert Mondavi, the winery is celebrating its 50-year anniversary, and I judged Sunset Magazine wine competition this year when they did their thing at Robert Mondavi. So they had set up a very special tasting for me and Sarah Schneider from Sunset Magazine and Ziggy the Wine Gal. And so we had to go to Robert Mondavi. But Tom did say he would taste me on those wines at some point soon.
And he's going to bring some people from Coombsville over here to be on Mouthful soon as well. And it was an extremely interesting tasting.
I've done a number of stories through the years mm-hmm. on that region, and it's actually really one of my favorite areas in America for Cabernet Franc mm-hmm. in particular. It's a hard grape to grow. Sometimes it over-ripens, or sometimes it's just under-ripe. That is a perfect area. It really reminds me a lot of the Loire Valley mm-hmm. in France, and it everything I taste from there is really good. It's not over the top, and that's why I think they're very good food wines.
That's one of, that was my first and my overall impression, is that nothing was over the top. Nothing was overly concentrated. Nothing was overly tannic. And there was, I believe, one Napa Valley wine in there, and you could really see the difference.
Yeah.
Really, really see the difference. And then the Sweet People from Covert Winery, which was where it took place. And that place, if you get a chance to visit it, and all of these places in Coombsville, you have to make by appointment. There's no tasting rooms. Yeah. But it's in the side of a mountain, and the only way you know it's there, if you're not thinking about it, is there's little vents popping up among the oak trees. Mm. And I just thought that was delightful. They sent me home with a bottle of their rosé, dry rosé, made in the style of, forget his name, the winemaker and owner. He's from the South of France.
No.
And his family has a winery. It seems like it's Santa Margarita or something like that. Mm. Very close.
It's not Luc Morlet or anything.
No, it's not Luc. Yeah. Anyway, their dry rosé is called Azur, because he's from the Côte d'Azur.
Oh, yeah.
And it is absolutely beautiful.
That's fantastic.
Just gorgeous. And I'm going to be doing a show sometime in July. We're going to do just all dry rosés from Northern California.
Sounds good.
They still need more exposure, but let's go back to this Garnett.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the qualities in this wine that are pervasive, if that's the right word, in Petaluma Gap.
Yeah, you know, the great thing was that I was there. Allison Crow, who's the winemaker, she took me up there just about a week ago. I'd been up there, just barely up there, a few years back, but I hadn't really looked over the vineyard. So she took me for a nice ride through there. Mm-hmm. And what it is it's kind of it's like a face that where the fog will come right through Petaluma. If you guys like look at Petaluma, they're just rolling hills, and they just keep going and going and going until you get to the ocean. So Mother Nature has worn that area down. They're beautiful, beautiful hills, and that's why all those cows and sheep and everything's running around out there, because they're not really steep. There are some steep spots, but this one is kind of a face that kind of faces towards the south. It's looking a little southwest. And it gets that sun. The sun goes over at the premium type time of the day, where it's just kind of covered, the fruit's covered. So it gets good morning exposure, and then as the sun starts to peak out towards the ocean, it gets that little nice heat on the other side, because most of the rows are facing that southwest direction. It is a rocky soil, and it is a lot of sand that's just been lifted up. This is old, ocean bed.
Old alluvial.
So it separates itself a little bit from, the rest of Carneros, which it flows into, which is where the wind will blow into. And it's because that's mainly clay out there. Mm-hmm. And this is much more sandy soils and old rock and old, prehistoric kinds of seabed here. So it's a really unique area. It's got those little cups and bowls in there, too, that some of the vines are really in. And this one particular block is in one of those little cauldrons. So it's really kind of a little bit protected, so it gets that really nice sun. And it's not too windy right there, but there's like a part that was going right down the hill that we were looking at. I probably wouldn't have ridden a mountain bike down it, because I would have just biffed. It just looked a little steep right there, but it's neat because there's different faces. So where it's at is really unique. What I get out of this is, because it's got a longer growing season, it doesn't ripen so fast, because that fog will come in and just cover it up. It's a little bit different than Russian River. Why I love Russian River is it does have that sun. And I know, because when I was very young, I grew up in Russian River Valley, and there's a reason that we went swimming, because it would get hot there. And there's a reason why Zinfandel grows in Russian River and it doesn't grow in any of these other areas. And it's because
it can get I was just thinking about it today. It was in June of 1999 that it got up to 118 degrees in Guerneville, and that was the year you probably saw it when at Davis Bynum, when the Bynums still owned it, and they'd put the food forest in.
Yeah.
You could see their rows of their premium Pinot Noir, the west side of the east side of the vine was fine.
Yeah.
The east side, the west side of the vine was raisins.
Yeah.
This was by the end of June. They lost half the crop because it cooked.
Yeah.
And I'm just hoping we're not heading into that. Yeah, that's an aside.
I'll say one thing about weather right now.
It does get hot.
I know. I'm a little concerned about this week and how I take my clothes and stuff, you know, because
sure.
You look at what's going on this weekend and, you know, it's supposed to be 122 in Phoenix. They canceled full-on major events because, I mean, people could die.
122? Yeah. Yes, that was supposed to be 124 somewhere. Yeah. I think that was also in Arizona.
Yeah, so, I mean, these are outstanding numbers if you just want to fry food outside or something, but for human beings and animals and things like that and crops, it just doesn't work. So we hope that this doesn't influence, you know, what's going to be happening up in our event that's coming up. But it's supposed to be really nice, and there's mm-hmm. still snowpack up there, and it's doing yeah. really well. But, you know, that's the one thing about Sonoma County, too. We're very lucky. We're next to the ocean.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, when that wind comes in the evenings, it's one of the greatest things on the face of the planet. We're all very smart people for moving here and living here. And the people that came here and planted grapes originally, they were very smart people. And I think that's really what we're learning. And it's kind of those bad vintages that, like you were just talking about with Davis Bynum. And, you know, 2010 was a hard one, too. There were a lot of those fried grapes out there, too. I was having a glass of Boleto Chardonnay today, and I was just thinking about when I saw those vines when I was judging the harvest fair, mm-hmm. And we were out there having a little barbecue, but I looked at the vines as I was walking up, and it was terrible what had happened to those vines. But, you know, you take chances, and you don't know what Mother Nature is going to do. You want to expose your fruit. You want to get them some sun sometimes, but you don't know what Mother Nature is going to do later.
No, that's why we need to hire elves with umbrellas.
Anything, yeah.
To shade every little cluster when those things yeah. happen. Let's yeah. go back a little bit yeah. to your career mm-hmm. as a sommelier.
Yeah.
How'd you start out? When did you start out? So you grew up in Petaluma.
Yeah.
You graduated from high school around 87?
I actually went to...
87?
I did, 87. And I did go to Santa Rosa Junior College, and I was the editor-in-chief at the Petaluma High, Go Trojans. And I was also the editor-in-chief of the Oak Leaf at uh-huh, Santa Rosa okay. Junior College. And so when I went to UC Davis, I was still technically an English major, but I had a great guy, Scott Fuller, who really got me into sociology at UC Davis at Santa Rosa Junior College. So I changed my major. I mean, being an English major, it's really a hard thing when you're just debating what the author meant about a book. I want to learn how to write. I don't want to debate.
I did my master's degree in English lit.
Yeah.
I was never very good. I was never very good at that element of it, debating what an author meant.
Yeah, my father-in-law, Gerald Haslam, is a great writer. And
we love Jerry. We love him. He's been on my show. Well, I did a special with him. I think I've done two specials with him about his books.
Oh, he's one of the greatest people to say, you know, I'm his in-law.
You're so lucky.
And, I mean, if I've got a crazy question about literature, I'm going to ask him because I can. Yeah. But the thing is that I actually started originally as a writer about wine, and I still am. I mean, I still mm-hmm. write for, you know, what I do with Sunset Magazine and Psalm Journal and Napa Sonoma Magazine and all these different people that call and say, Chris, you're the best guy to write this story. Can you help us? And I really appreciate that. But, you know, it was back in the 90s when I worked with Wine X magazine, which became a very hip magazine.
Is that why we know each other?
Yes, we do. Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. I did a little bit for them, and we both know Daryl.
Of course, Daryl.
Bless his heart for doing what Daryl, editor and publisher of Wine X, is now taking care of animals in Hillsburg. Love that.
He always loved kitties, I'll tell you that.
I stopped by just randomly because I had some extra time. I walked in, I thought maybe I was going to get a kitten, and they have the vet tech come out, and it's Daryl.
Yeah.
That was the first time I knew he was there.
Yeah, he's got a passion for animals, and there's nothing wrong with that, I'll tell you. You know, he was such an inspiration when I graduated from Davis. So what happened at Davis was I became the music critic at Davis. And so a lot of winemakers will tell you, oh, man, Chris Sawyer, he introduced me to the Pixies. He introduced me to Smashing Pumpkins or Cake or whoever it was that was playing right then at the time and who I was writing about. And It was a great time, but the editors liked my style of writing, and they said, you know, can you do some more stuff on science, and can you go do some stories on the vet center, and can you do some stuff on the viticulture and enology programs? And I said, well, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, that sounds kind of fun. I grew up in Russian River. You know, I used to ride my BMX bikes, you know, near Larkfield and all around Windsor and all these kinds of places and Guerneville. And so, yeah, I'll do some interviews. And soon enough, I was like, going, you know what? I'm going to take an elective class. And 9 classes in viticulture and enology later, I was swearing I was going to become a winemaker. But the fact was, I already had degrees in other categories, and I was kind of ready to get out. And I didn't want to take those science classes. So I made a pact to myself. I said, I'm going to move back to Sonoma County, and I'm going to write about wine. And I got lucky because I started taking some of the classes at Santa Rosa Junior College again with Bill Traverso and Marie Gewurz and all these kinds of cool people, Gerald Boyd and
Rich Frazier. Thomas.
Yeah, Rich Thomas. I mean, him, Rich Thomas, first thing in the morning when your hands are freezing and you're pruning, but he whips open the trunk and you're drinking Texas red wine out of a plastic cup. It's just, that is Rich Thomas in a heartbeat right there. And it's so fun. But, you know, at that point, Daryl Roberts had heard about me, and he had he reached out to me, and he said, you know, I could really use your help, and can you come here and help me with WineX? And that was a great offer that I could not refuse. It was actually at the same time that Gloria Ferrer, I had put in my, you know, my name for getting a job there, and they wanted me pretty bad. And
what were you going to do, though?
I was going to be part of the wine education program for the tasting room and everything, and I had that or WineX. I said, you know what? I can always work in a tasting room.
Yeah.
I'm never going to have the opportunity to do what I do. And I went with it. And, you know, working with Daryl until the magazine folded, you know, it was like 9 years later, I flew all over the world. I did everything possible to continue to enrich myself as far as education. And at the same time, I also was working with John Lasseter as his private sommelier. And I've been working with John and Nancy for 20 years as their sommelier. So
they have a pretty amazing cellar.
They really do. And also with the Getty family, I worked with them for 7 years as their private sommelier at their house. So it was during those very, very special years there in the 90s that I got to work with Fred Dane, Evan Goldstein, Bob Bath were my mentors for the sommelier program. And so I still work with them today. Fred and I just did an amazing thing last year with Richard Arrowwood, where we got to do a 50-year retrospective with him because it was his 50th harvest.
Yeah.
And for him to call me along with Fred, and Fred and I just finished judging the San Francisco International, and we're buds. I mean, he's like, oh, hey, Saw, what's going on? I'm like, oh, he can call me whatever he wants. He's a master of what he does. And, you know, I went a long ways in that program, and then I just started applying it all over the place. And, you know, it was nice. Bohemian nominated me, I won it again last year as the top sommelier in Sonoma County. For the 3 years they've done it, I've won it every year. So I just do it in so many different ways, and in this case I'm taking it to Telluride with me, and I think that's a really great opportunity for doing it there. And you'll see also this fall what I'll be doing with Feast It Forward and Sunset Magazine in Napa, as well as the Culinary Institute. So a lot of new programs coming up with me involved, and I'm still working on my book too, which is a great book on 1983 and the making of 19 appellations on the West Coast. There's a whole series I did
for Gary Farrell's First Harvest.
Absolutely. And I did a great series for Wine Business Monthly in 2013. So that was their 30-year anniversary for all of them. So it was the first series of its kind that that magazine had ever done. And, I mean, believe me, when you read the book, you'll go, wow, there's way more information than you shared there, because these are some of the great founding people of our wine world today. And there's a lot of them here in Sonoma County.
For the average person, you know, the person who wants to drink wine for dinner, they're in Sonoma County. They kind of know a little bit, but they don't know a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, they couldn't name all 14 appellations, and they have no reason to really try. Right. How does a sommelier interface with that?
Great question.
It's yeah. really the broadest section of wine drinkers in the country.
Yes. Well, first of all, I mean, when you're a sommelier, your job is really to become a conduit of greatness to between mm-hmm. the chef, the restaurant, and the guests.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people don't walk into the restaurant because of a sommelier. They walk in there because of the reputation of the restaurant and the style of food that the chef makes.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is to really complement that
mm-hmm.
with the type of wine list that you build. And when I was at the Lodge at Sonoma, I should have mentioned that too, for 10 straight years,
mm-hmm.
From 2004 to 2014,
mm-hmm.
You know, I got to do that with some great chefs. I mean,
you maintained the wine list.
I did, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It was all my wine list.
Okay.
And so it was from the bottom up. And they really brought me in just as a consultant originally in 2004, and then they couldn't let me go. And I thought, oh, yeah, I'll just stay here for a few years. And I ended up being there for a decade. And there I got to really educate people. And I mm-hmm. had classes every single week. And so I did over 500 classes there. And so your first instinct is to go up and to just ask, how are you guys doing? You know, glad you're here. You know, this is my wine list. I'm really excited about some new things that I put on there. And it's really there to complement chef's food. So I can't wait to help you, you know, pick out some really fun wines for you to taste. And can, you know, please take a look at the nice wine flights I have. They're really kind of fun to do. Or if you want a great bottle of wine, let's just find out what you really like. And at that point, they feel mm-hmm. very comfortable with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I come back, they've got questions, they've got things, they want to say something to you. They want to make a little statement like, oh, do you know where we were today? And so all of a sudden you make this friendship that mm-hmm. really lasts, you know, a few hours, and makes them hopefully want to hug you on the way out because you did such a great job uh-huh. that they really just enjoyed everything that you did. So that's how you start. I mean, it's just to let them know that you're the kind of sommelier that's not going to make them feel uncomfortable or intimidated
mm-hmm.
because that's not the way I designed my list or any list I've ever designed. It should be something where you're there and you learn a ton. You just go, gosh, that was so fun. I can't wait to come back. That's what I want people to say mm-hmm. when they think about me. And so I think I did a really good job in that. And I think that that's just really the approach. And, you know, also to find out what they're having. Sometimes if you're a little bit behind and there's other people that you're trying to take care of and now you come back to that table, you just ask the waitress or the waiter and say, what are they having?
Mm-hmm.
So you go in there just ready with things in your head, you know, what they mm-hmm. want to spend and all these kinds of things. And it's kind of interesting, too, when I work with the Lassiter wines, you know, sometimes I'll take them on behalf of John and Nancy to really star somms, you know, in the Bay Area and even in L.A. or wherever I'm at. And I really just go to great restaurants that they really love to eat. You know, and
right.
So, but I talk to them, the sommeliers, about things like that and about concepts. Like, so you got four people that sit down at one table and they're all having something different. What do? You know, do you build, do you just try to sell them a big cab that's going to make that fish look like crap?
No, you don't.
Or
do that.
Do you find these kinds of blends that are mm-hmm. going to complement everyone's plate? And that's really the kinds of wines that I always look for, are these kinds of things that have a lot of personality.
Mm-hmm.
They really kind of bounce around. They open up a lot more. If you taste this wine now, I mean, this is even opening up.
It is.
There's a lot more berry flavors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really important thing about that. And I'm going to open another one here for us to taste, too. This is a little St. Francis. I got a little story about something I'm doing with St. Francis next month. But
What year is the St. Francis?
This is the St. Francis. This is the Bocce Vineyard, and this is 2013. This is Russian River. These are very old vines,
mm-hmm.
and this will be one of the featured ones that we're going to be doing at our film festival, which will be coming up next month. So we've done this. This will uh-huh. be our seventh annual.
Here's your little dump bucket if you need it.
Okay, once again. Ooh,
there we go.
Nice sound effects there. And I'm going to just check this, make sure this wine is tasting good. And I always, you know, I don't wear a little VIN cup around my neck all the time. I always tell everyone, why would you do that? That would stain my tie. You know, I'm not going to do it because of that, you know.
Yeah.
But the fact is, I can smell a cork and tell you if I think it's Got some funny smell to it. And do you mind if I have a little sip of that with you guys, just so I can make sure it's done? That's all you need to do. You don't need to have, you don't need to taste everyone's wine. That's, you know, that's kind of foolish. You know, when I judge major competitions like the Harvest Fair, which is coming up, and all these kinds of different events, Sunset Magazine, San Francisco Chronicle, whatever, you can tell right off the bat if the smell is really, there's something fishy about that smell, and you just don't, you're going to take a chance. You're going to ask your other judges. You're going to say, hey, what do you guys think? Should we get a new bottle of this? Because I think that's really important. And I, you know, as a sommelier, I want everyone to have a perfect bottle. I don't want it to be flawed and then them to think that's what the wine tasted like if it shouldn't.
How many wines in an average week or other amount of time you choose, how many wines do you taste?
Hundreds.
Hundreds.
Yeah.
How specifically, with technique, how do you keep your palate open?
You drink a lot of water and you become a really professional spitter.
Right. But do you have to do anything, you know, the way it's supposedly the tannins will leach out all the fat or protein or something from your palate? Do you do anything, you know, suck on a stick of butter, eat roast beef?
Well, when we're judging, you know, major competitions, we have really important things on the table. When we just did the San Francisco International, which was 5,000 wines, it's me and 49 other judges, and we, you know, we went at it, and we were doing about 160 a day, and it was, you know, it was intense. But you use that very bland cheese in the morning. You use bread. Use, if you're doing whites, I'll tell you one of the greatest tricks you can ever do at home. If you guys are hearing me and you like white wine, try it with a little celery. You would be surprised how that can just clean your palate out so easily. It's very different than if you ate a little wedge of apple. That's
acid. So astringent. Yes.
Yeah. What celery has in it is natural mineral, and it's this amazing saltiness. That's why we have celery salt. That's why we cook with celery. Of all the things, like, they're not the greatest bites you've ever taken, but that's not the point of celery. Celery is to provide you with this flavor that you can't really price. And so that's why we use celery in so many ways. And why
I love celery.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Well, you're so good at salads. I mean, you know it as well as anyone.
Celery contributes what you're saying, that mineral element, that cooling, slightly briny from the sea mineral element, and it lifts everything, especially if you don't overcook it.
Yeah. And I'll tell you one thing where all of us are very gullible, the wine judges who have had them before, these Graber green olives. They are the most addictive green olives. I mean, once you start popping them, it's hard to resist. I mean, that's a big savior. They're fairly expensive for a can, but they're really, really good, and they will completely clean your palate.
So you do have all of those little taste tricks.
We have them,
and
then usually when we're doing red wines in the afternoons, we're definitely doing red meat. We had a batch this week that was like, it looked like it was real raw. We asked them to actually take it back and just, can you just put that in a little foil and cook it for a few minutes?
Because
it
be in heaven.
Just really doesn't look like it's like we should be eating that. But you know, you need these things because your palate needs to keep being cleansed in different ways.
Sure.
You have tannins, you have all those kinds of things, and you want to give each wine 100% of your attention.
Yeah, people, you know, it's hard to get sympathy if you judge wine. It's hard to get sympathy from people who don't know that it's actually really very hard physical and mental work.
It really is.
It's very challenging.
And there's also the lawyer that comes out of you, because if you really feel strong about a wine, you better be ready to argue it.
Yeah, and you have to. I learned, because every panel I was ever on, and I seem to have fallen off.
Well, you need
the
to
radar.
Get you back. Yeah.
I have been keeping my head low because it's hard work. I was always the only female. I don't think I've ever been on a panel with another woman.
That's changed.
Yes. I have learned to pick my battles.
Yeah. There are great, you know, male, female, there are so many great tasters out there now. And it's just, I'm just always honored when people ask me to judge these competitions. And I've been doing it for almost 20 years now. And I mean, when I first judged the first one for Vineyard and Winery Management Magazine, first panel I was on was with Dan Berger. I mean, you want to talk about a guy that's intimidating sometimes.
Dan's like, especially, I love Dan. Dan's great.
But when he puts his newspaper up in front of him, was the minute he finishes, like expecting you to be finished at the same time, you're like, oh, this is not going in the right direction. I can't believe I'm talking about this as a judge for 19 years after that first day. You know, but I did it. And it takes a lot of devotion. And you learn tricks from the best. And, mm-hmm. and Dan's one of the best. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it.
It's all, I loved it when I've been on panels with him.
Yeah.
And I want to remind people that time flies on Mouthful. My guest is sommelier Christopher Sawyer. Tell me your website again, because it's just not working. I'm not getting online.
SawyerSom.com. So it's like Tom Sawyer. Yeah. Sawyer Som.
It's a good read.
SOMM.com. Yeah. Right now there's a little set of stories about fathers on
Joel
it, right?
Joel Peterson.
Mike Gergich with the Violet Gergich and some like the Katzes, you know, mm-hmm. Andy Katz and Jesse Katz. I mean, it's just fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, I also want to remind people that at about 7 minutes before 7, I will be giving the phone number and offering 2 VIP tickets. To Lucky Rice Feast. It is taking place on Friday. And the VIP tickets get you in an hour early to the event. And it's a celebration of Asian food in San Francisco. And let me tell you some of the highlights. Unzu Restaurant will have creamy asparagus soup, puffed wild rice, Meyer lemon cream. Also, smoked chicken, daikon, carrot, cilantro with Togarashi aioli. There you go. That's a mouthful.
Yum.
Asian Box will have slow-roasted pork and shrimp rice noodle roll with fresh herbs and spicy fish sauce. Attic will have Philippine Kalinga Unoy heirloom rice with a quail egg, fried chicken chicharrones, and Philippine fish sauce. Azalina's. You don't find many Malaysian restaurants around here, but there is Azalina's, and they will have a Malaysian warm salad cup, a Malaysian blini. Let's see, jumping ahead to Fang Restaurant, because doesn't everyone want to eat in a restaurant called Fang?
Absolutely.
I certainly do. Southeast Asian hot vermicelli salad. Ichi Sushi and Ichi Sushi and Nibar. Hawaiian Big Eye Tuna and Avocado Tataki, and that sounds really good. Open Blue has Yakiniku Kobia. MY China has minced pork and salted egg yolk dumpling. The Ramen Bar has peanut butter miso cookies, wasabi pea rice crispy treats, and yuzu shortbread cookies. So there's all kinds of yummy fun to be had. None of it seems like it's taking itself too seriously.
Sounds
like a good time. There's roasted summer corn and curry leaf soup from Dosa. There's, let's see, tea leaf salad. Sounds really good. It has fermented tea leaf, shredded cabbage, fried garlic, sesame seeds, peas, sunflower seeds, peanuts, tomatoes, and lime wedges. That is from Burmese Kitchen. And then Buffalo Theory has Red Horse Beer Braised Pork Belly with Carolina Rice. By Carolina Rice, I assume that's a red rice. So that is Lucky Rice Festival taking place this coming Friday, June 24th in San Francisco. So I will be giving you a phone number, and we're going to take, should we take the third caller? We like the third caller. Yes. Okay. So back to my guest, Christopher Sawyer. I want to ask a sort of selfish question.
Sure.
I want you to indulge me.
Absolutely.
And actually, we could explore this territory. You must agree that there is personal drinking and professional drinking, just like there's personal eating and professional eating. Mm-hmm. And I always use oatmeal as an example because I really hate oatmeal. But I can still tell, if I have to, I can taste oatmeal and tell you if it's made properly or not made properly. So there's, you know, and you have to be able, if you're a restaurant critic, if you're a sommelier, you have to be able to sort your personal, not objectify your personal preferences. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yep.
But I'm objectifying mine for a moment, because
yes,
there's a particular style of Pinot Noir that I don't see as much as I once did. Gary Farrell's no longer making wine, sadly. And Don Baumhefner, who's...
No, I love Don.
Copeland Creek Pinot Noirs were some of the best I've ever tasted. So beautiful and delicate and ephemeral with that Pinot thing in the nose that just, I mean, that's the thing that really gets me about wine. Where do we find it now? Don lost those vineyards when the man who was, man died and it went to his heirs and his heirs wanted to do something different. So for somebody who loves that particular style, where do we go?
We go towards the coast for those styles. I think there's something about that. These kinds of red fruits that are going to take you to that level. The kind of earthy tones that you get, the forest floors that you get from these vineyards that are out near Freestone, Occidental, up there towards Gualala. They are the kinds of ones that we, and we did a tasting for the West of the West group in San Francisco just recently, and it was a great panel of really good psalms, and I actually was speaking from the crowd quite a bit too, putting my two cents worth in there. But I thought that they did a really great job on this, and really the red fruits I think are really what makes the difference. When you start getting inland and you start getting really these black fruits, and there's a lot more stuff. What I like, what my little personal preference is sometimes when you get those little blue fruits in there, it's kind of like that cool climate Syrah to that lavender and blueberries that just like, you just get seduced by that nose. I mean, you could just sit there and smell that wine for a half an hour.
That's how I felt about the Copeland Creek and about certain of Gary's vintages.
Yeah, they're definitely distinctively different and they make you... They make you salivate before you even get there, and you want it so bad. And then when you taste it, you hope it follows through with what it smells like. And I think that, you know, what we've got here is something very special in Sonoma County because we do have the diversity of styles. You know, I personally like those styles too, and I like them because they go with a wider range of food. You start talking about the bigger berries and all the black fruit and all these kinds of things. You're talking about steak, you're talking about duck, you're talking about lamb, but you're not really talking about chicken, fish. You're not talking about really interesting salads. You're not talking about things like that. And that's where you're going with the style that you really like. And no wonder, I mean, you have such a good book on salads. I think it would match up really nicely. I think about a lot of things like that. I mean, when you get into plums and cranberries and all these kinds of things and raspberries in salads and how you make that raspberry vinaigrette and why you can do a Pinot Noir with that. People didn't think you could do salads with red wines.
No, they didn't think you can, and you can.
And that's those home ec teachers who never tasted wines like we have today. And I think that what we've done is really great, and I think we've got it here in Sonoma County.
So you can't name it a couple producers?
Well, let's see, what would be a really good example of that? I think Red Car and what they're doing.
I haven't tasted Red Car for a while.
Yeah, I think what Carol's doing, and I think that program is great. Their rosé is a killer, too.
I'll keep that in mind.
I think Red Car is a really good example of that. I think some of the stuff that you're getting from the Petaluma Gap, too, like the Keller Estate, just the regular Keller Estate goes really, really well. But also, as you get way up there, and I think Pay is one.
Pay. Yes.
And I think that was really kind of the crowd favorite at this tasting that we did in the city. It was fantastic. And I wanted that. I wanted a bottle to take out of there with me because it was just so good. And, you know, as a good sommelier, you should just be thinking about how many fun foods you could pair with that. That's what should make you excited, not just what you personally feel, because it's not always about you.
Of course. Well, that's what I meant with the introduction. Yeah. You know, there's personal drinking and there's professional drinking.
No.
It's two very different things.
Yeah. I've got things in my cellar that I just save for the right people to drink them with me, you know, because they can understand these wines, and I want to save them for people
I've
like that.
I've got one bottle of Copeland Creek left. I think it's an... Oh, it's the second to the last vintage, so it must be 06.
Yeah.
I think 07 was his last vintage.
Gosh, you make me want to call Don as soon as possible.
I want to get Don back on the air, see what he's doing now, because we know he's doing something interesting.
He
was really the first person to truly introduce me to Pinot Noir. I was already tasting my way. I'd come back from France in 90, and was tasting my way around whatever Pinots I could find at the time. And I went to a tasting that he did at the brand new John Ash & Company.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, it was Pinot Noir, went all the way back to the 60s with, I know there was a Joseph Swan in there and a couple of others. And the first thing he said when he came out was, 97% of the Pinot Noirs in the world should be poured down the drain. The rest are the best wines in the world. That got our attention.
Yeah, that will get your attention. Yeah.
So that was really, I was very much a novice, very much a novice. And he was a big influence on me. But all these years later, I can't say that I really have ever found anything to disagree with him about.
You know who really turned me on to wine? I'll give him a lot of credit to is Michael Hirschberg.
Oh, okay, sure.
And you know, I worked for Michael at Mistral. I was his sommelier, really one of my first sommelier jobs.
Mistral was where Bistro 29 currently is.
Right.
It's been Cafe Lolo. It's been Fans.
Oh yeah, that one.
And I think
we
had
the one on Dutton where we were.
Mistral. I'm thinking of
what was it before that?
Matisse.
Exactly.
I was thinking of Matisse.
But they were both his. And,
yes.
And you know what he loved was French wines.
It's now Franchetti's Kitchen.
Yep. And John's a great guy, too. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of good food.
There's something coming up. Your friend Ziggy's doing on Thursday.
That's right.
Bice and Spice. She's getting together with her sweetie.
Yep.
And he'll be bringing goat cheese from his family farm, Redwood Hill. And she selected, I think, four or five vermouth, and they're doing a vermouth and cheese tasting, and John's going to be making some foods. That's on Thursday if you're interested at Franchetti's Kitchen, 1229 North Dutton in Santa Rosa.
Good memory there. Wow.
The visual memory. What can I say? Anyway, yeah, I think I'm going to actually try to make it if I can get over there. If it's not 105 degrees,
if I wasn't in Telluride, I would be there.
But that's a fun place to be.
But look for Ziggy and I to do more there. We've got some new plans coming up for some really fun wine educational classes there.
Yeah, nice. In our last few minutes, we don't have a lot of time for people who aren't necessarily going to restaurants where there's a sommelier on staff, where the wine list has been professionally crafted. People look for you at places like Franchetti's. They go to your website, where I assume you have your appearances listed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, SawyerSom.com is my main website.
Yourself on that website, you call yourself an entertainer.
Well, I am. I mean, I'm a you know, wine is edutainment. You know, it's edutainment. And, you know, what I've done with, you know, wine and movies, I mean, I became very well known for that. I mean, they've done stories all over the world on me from my pairings of movies and wine. And, I mean, I became the world's first ever film festival sommelier in Sonoma. It was about almost 10 years ago. And the story that they just did on me a couple years ago in the Hollywood Reporter, you know, it's something that is an application that anyone can do at home. And sometime when you guys try this, just remember me for telling you this is really fun. It's when you just put in that DVD or just do, you know, Netflix, and you push that button and that movie starts. And you do the same thing. You pop open that bottle and you pour it. And then you guys kick back and you're watching that movie and you're kind of starting to get to know this wine. It's the same thing. It's called character development. And a great wine is the characters will continue to explode in your mouth as you continue to follow it. It's the same guy, the first guy you see in the movie you think is a total jerk, but by the end you want to hug him. And so it's the way that a wine opens up. A fine wine will really, really continue to open up. You're like, oh yeah, I want more, you know, about 25 minutes into the movie. And then you keep coming back to it and going, wow, this is really, really an experience.
So what do you drink with The Godfather?
Oh, The Godfather. Well, you have to have three because you have to see the whole trilogy.
Sure.
I would do Sicilian right now.
Okay.
And I was just in Sicily. The Batani is a great one. I was just having a dinner at A16 with one of the brothers there. And you just... It's Sicilian, you know.
Yeah.
You just gotta,
what about Mean Street? Same thing.
Mean Street's a little bit different. I mean, you're talking about a hearty one, but you've also got characters there. So a big Bordeaux style blend, mm-hmm. Napa Valley with, but that match up with the characters and how they kind of come together in different ways and how it develops. And I'm basically explaining exactly the way a movie goes.
Yeah. What about, did you see the movie Ghost World?
I did not see Ghost World.
Watch Ghost World, okay. And then tell me what you'd drink with it.
Yeah.
It's Scarlett Johansson before anyone knew her.
Okay.
And it's based on a graphic novel. It's okay. Really one of my favorite modern movies.
Yeah. One of my favorite.
What about The Graduate? What do you drink with The Graduate? But you can't say scotch. You have to say wine.
No. Okay. Yeah, it's got to be a developed wine. It's from the cellar because, you know, there's the essence of a little bit of older and younger in that movie.
Yes.
So.
Okay, there you go. And on that note, we are out of time. There's just enough time for you to call. We are going to take the third caller for the VIP tickets for June 24th's Lucky Rice Fest in San Francisco. The number to call, 584-2020, 584-2020. Good night. Meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up old family farms. Selling out, who can blame them? Wine's a cash crop growing strong.